Hi, guys. Welcome to the Advanced Practice Perspectives podcast. I'm Tricia Williams.
And I'm Toby O'Brien. This is a podcast created by advanced practice providers for advanced practice providers. Our goal is to provide you with education and inspiration. We will be chatting with pediatric experts on timely key topics and giving you an inside look at the various advanced practice role at Children's Mercy.
Today, we will be chatting with Melissa List and Molly Guion. They are both pediatric nurse practitioners at Children's Mercy Kansas City. They co-manage our advanced practice education program and are both passionate about promoting advanced practice education. We will be having a conversation around how to get the most out of your experience as an APRN student. They will share some important details to consider for students beginning their clinicals at Children's Mercy. Welcome to the podcast, Melissa and Molly.
Thank you for having us.
You are so welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself, whoever wants to start.
I'll go ahead and go first. I am Melissa List. I have been here at Children's Mercy for the last 6 years. Prior to that, I was working in Dallas, Texas. All my clinical background is in bone marrow transplants and have been in this job now with Molly since November. We're really excited to be here and so glad that you're willing to have us.
Molly, you're up.
My name is Molly Guion. I've been at Children's Mercy going on 15 years this fall. I've been a nurse practitioner since 2020, and my clinical work has been in the pediatric ICU.
Well, we are both so excited that you guys are here today. It's pretty rare to get four people together at once, so I'm excited to have this conversation today. So let's get started. We want to know, what do you guys feel like students need to know prior to starting their clinical rotations at Children's Mercy?
You know, something that we have found to be extremely imperative is that our students who are coming here for clinical experiences understand that we are collecting all of their requests through our centralized office, which our EPP office is literally just Molly and I. So we sound fancy, but it's us.
Fancy girls.
Yes. And so those requests are all centralized through us so that we can handle a myriad of things, including compliance and optimizing clinical placements for everybody who wants to come and do clinicals here at Children's Mercy.
Yeah, and I think to talk on that too, we get a lot of questions of why do students have to go through one office? Why can't they just reach out across the institution and find their own preceptors? Well, it really is because there's so many things we have to consider when we're matching students with preceptors, which we can get into a bit later, but just wanted to say that out loud, that oftentimes that's a big question we get from our students.
And it's really like a giant puzzle that we're putting together. So we're really working in the best interests of the preceptors and what their schools are requiring and making sure that we're meeting their needs and that we are also not burning out our preceptors here at Mercy as well.
Those are some great points. It does sound like a big puzzle and probably does need to be well thought through and organized. So I think we appreciate you guys bringing that to the attention of everyone. I'm sure they're wondering that, and that's a good point. So thanks for addressing that one.
I think that we have limited number of preceptors and a large amount of students. And so everybody needs primary care hours, right? And so we only have so many primary care advanced practice providers that then you have to start funneling them into subspecialties. And I'm sure there's a lot of different requirements from the multiple institutions that we support students from. So can you talk a little bit about that and about how that plays into a role and things that people should consider prior?
I think that's a really good point. Something that is just globally of issue, I think all of us can speak to being nurse practitioners, is it's rough out there to get clinical hours, period, which is going to be a surprise to no one. And so, you know, Molly and I have actually had really insightful conversations about this, that before you even start school is looking at your program and seeing what kind of relationships and assistance you're going to have in terms of helping you facilitate those clinical hours. You know, our needs here at Mercy are ever changing. We do our absolute best to prioritize our employees who are going back to school here at our institution because they're an investment for us. We offer generous tuition reimbursements and really the max that the federal government allows. And so we want to make sure that we're essentially returning on that investment by making sure we're educating people the best that we possibly can.
And then you also brought up a good point about all the different schools and what they require. So between the different programs that are out there for nurse practitioners, you know, at Children's Mercy, we're primarily looking at our primary pediatric NPs, our acute care pediatric NPs, and then FNPs as well. We hire so many other kinds of NPs, but those will be the three that we can kind of talk about today mostly. But even amongst those three degrees, people choose a wide variety of schools to achieve those certifications. And so each school has its own criteria, either based on the state it's located in, because we know that a lot of students have an option to do virtual programs, but then also their coursework may have different clinical requirements and different expectations. And so we have to be able to match that as well.
Gigantic puzzle.
Yeah.
So it's like not even talking about different degree seeking opportunities that the students have, but the multiple states that they can be getting that education from based on virtual. Plus, we straddle Kansas and Missouri. So we have to think about those requirements. So I applaud you guys for trying to figure out and debunk the puzzle.
Well, and then like Melissa was saying, you know, when you're looking at going back to school, a lot of students are so excited and they look at all different programs and choose the best one for them. But then additionally, something to keep in mind is where you plan to practice as a nurse practitioner, because states also have criteria based on credit hours, clinical hour requirements, just to obtain initial licensure as a nurse practitioner. And so we've seen recent changes in the states that we live in, just here, like you said, straddling Kansas and Missouri. And so those are things to keep in mind as well.
What are some things that we could help students sort of think through once they've been matched and have a preceptor at Children's Mercy? What's kind of the next steps in some of your kind of top priorities that students should know before they come into their clinicals?
I think probably the first piece that we want them to understand is once you have been matched and you get that initial email, please celebrate because we're all very excited for you. And then also please read the rest of the email because the rest of that email contains some pretty important instructions on that compliance piece that we alluded to a little bit earlier. And that can be kind of a rigorous process and it can feel a little bit daunting in that a lot of the things that we unfortunately have to ask for to be resubmitted through our system are things that employees have already had to do, and you probably already had to do for school. We promise we're not trying to make anybody's life harder. It is just the rules. They are not our rules. We just unfortunately have to make sure that they're followed.
Yeah, and a lot of those regulations come with immunization status, background checks to ensure safety of our very specific patient population. So we want to make sure that each student's coming on site as a learner, whether they're an employee or not, and meeting all those requirements and expectations.
I remember being a student long ago as a new APP student in my journey, and there's a lot of those documentations that you have to upload. And so it's just knowing, and like you said, making sure you read that email. So once you're ready to start scheduling your time with your preceptor, what are some important things and some important tidbits for the student and maybe the preceptor alike?
I think for the students, it's really important to know that their preceptor may have specific hours that they set aside to have students with them, or days that they may be on vacation, or they're orienting a new APRN to their department. And so the scheduling can be a tricky part for preceptors as much as it can be for students, because we know that a lot of our students are still currently working. And so to be open-minded as a student and reach out to your preceptor once you know who those people will be and start working with them and see what their schedule can look like. That way you can help facilitate by working around it and optimizing the days that you can be with them. So reaching out to them is the key, because often preceptors will see these emails and just be waiting for the students to make that first move.
Well, and when that first move is made, I think the other really important piece of that is not to make anybody sweat, but like this is the first communication piece in a semester-long job interview. And so, you know, starting with, hey, bro, or hey, good looking, what you got cooking is probably like not the best way to start.
Sure. Sorry, that made me really laugh.
maybe like this is the chance to like show your professionalism.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. You know, this was my process, which does not mean it's the right thing to do, but like, I want to write to this person like I would write to my lovely grandmother in terms of like how polite I would be. I would use my best punctuation, because that's something that she would really be into, and make sure that I say thank you, and make sure that you're also putting out in terms of like the pieces that you want to make sure in there. You want to introduce yourself, explain where you are at in your program, because that is not something that Molly and I regularly communicate to the preceptor. It's really on you. So is this your first clinical experience? You're about to graduate. That helps give your preceptor an idea of kind of what your needs will be going into, and then sharing a little bit about your goals for your clinical rotation, if you have them, if that's something that you want to kind of discuss with your preceptor on the first day, and then also asking about attire and expectations in terms of what does everyone wear? Generally speaking, in the critical care areas, scrubs are acceptable. Is it business casual? We certainly don't want anybody showing up in yoga pants or messy buns, which is comfy, but not the norm. And then kind of what time they would like you to be there, because sometimes preceptors prefer that you arrive a little bit after them. Sometimes people like to arrive early to pre-round, and kind of sussing those things out in those primary communications.
On the note of attire, we just want people to remember, if you're an employee of Children's Mercy and coming on site as a student, that we really need you labeled as a student. So attire at Children's Mercy is really open for our nursing colleagues and NPs alike to include Children's Mercy t-shirts and sweatshirts that we all know are so cute and so comfortable. But sometimes they'll have departments on there that delineate where you work. And so if you work in a primary department and have attire specific to that place, we really ask that you don't wear that when you're on site as a student. It can be confusing for the medical team, patients, and caregivers. If you're arriving and looking, you know, like a nurse that primarily works in urgent care, and now you're in a critical care unit, you're wearing an urgent care sweatshirt, it can be confusing for the families and then people on the team as well. So we really ask that you keep away from wearing that kind of clothing, and then make sure to wear your student badge, and then any other rules or guidelines that are defined by your school for attire that you should be following those as well.
I like the idea of the introduction email, making it like as your cover letter to your application kind of thing. I know I've had a lot of students in the past that is just like, hey, thank you for being my preceptor. What does your schedule look like? Those kinds of things would be very helpful as a preceptor to give you that learning opportunity that you need and to kind of set you up for success.
And students may not think about this often, but preceptors sometimes have more than one student in a semester. And so I'm sure you've had semesters where you've had two or three students, and being able to know, yes, where each person's at or what their expectations are helps you then know what days to set aside for those people or what would be the best opportunities for them based on your own schedule.
Well, and then it's like to start off too with like charting. If you're in your last semester and you've done all your clinicals at Children's Mercy, I'm going to assume you should be charting, versus your first rotation, you're going to be observing a lot. You're not necessarily going to be charting in a subspecialty clinic that I work in kind of thing. So that's very helpful. I like that helpful hint.
Yeah. And then I think too, also, you know, when you first reach out to the preceptor, you may not have goals aligned or well established of what you want out of that specific rotation, but it is good before your first day to come up with those. And to be able to communicate that with the preceptor to make sure the preceptor understands what you want out of it, but then also that they may be able to meet those goals, because you may have goals that are unrealistic. So if your expectation out of this rotation is to become really apt at writing H&Ps, but that preceptor doesn't do that in their area of work, then you may want to be able to communicate that with each other so that you know that I'm not going to get much experience here writing H&Ps, but we can figure out something that will be helpful for your learning while you're here with me.
Sure. It's just like that failure to plan is a plan to fail. So just coming up with a plan of what you're hoping to learn and communicating that, I think, really sets students up for success for sure.
Yeah. Then the other thing too is that like every rotation may not be your dream job. You may not necessarily want to go work an ENT clinic or an urgent care or the critical care areas, and you may have a dream job in mind. But ultimately, everyone has to take boards, and all of these experiences that you're going to get are going to help you with your board exam prep. And so using each experience will be helpful for not just board exams, but also everyone, even though we all practice very differently in different parts of the hospital and within the clinics, there's so much that you can take away from each rotation. And so keeping that open mind, I think, is also important.
I think it's also important, say you're in your last semester and you do already have a job, or you know that you're going to get your dream job, let your preceptor know, because then it's like, I had a student who was going to go work the cardiac floor and be in the heart center. And so she told me, so I led her education process through ENT of things that she would see on a cardiology standpoint from ENT, you know, like you can have a unilateral vocal cord paralysis, or you're going to see this and this and this, and let's talk through those processes. So it can also help tailor your educational process too, if you know that and share that with your preceptor.
Absolutely. And I think it really speaks to your willingness to learn and your willingness to be just a human who is able to interact with other humans, to acknowledge that you have something to learn from everybody that you meet. And I think that something that is not always paramount for new APT students to understand is that word travels fast around our institution. And so even if it is not your dream job, you wake up every morning and you pretend like that is the best place that you could possibly have imagined to be. And I think one other piece that I got feedback from my preceptors while I was in nurse practitioner school is that when I reached out to them, I also asked if there was, certainly not demanding additional reading, but if there was anything that they recommend that I familiarize myself with in terms of the literature prior to arriving at clinical. And 99% of the time, I got an attachment back with plenty of articles to read and to review prior to stepping foot. Not that they expected me to know all of that, but it was great to have references going into the clinical experience and at least a place to start.
Do you have any recommendations for how students should interact with their preceptors, some boundaries to think about with their preceptors, that sort of thing that can help guide new APRN students?
Yeah, I think just remembering often that your preceptor volunteered their time to do this. You know, it's not mandated that we put students with NPs throughout the institution. And we also, when we send out the student request list, ask for preceptors to submit their names and how many hours they'd be willing to precept for that upcoming semester. And we're always so amazed and thankful for all the preceptors across Children's Mercy that submit themselves for taking on students in the upcoming semester. But they volunteer that time. They're excited to have you there. And also keeping in mind in that communication with your preceptor that there are certain things that will come up with patient care that will have to come first. And so while you are there to learn, your preceptor may at times have to prioritize patient care to get those things accomplished and done, and then focus on some learning opportunities later on in the day or after those things have been completed. And so just be mindful of those appropriate times to ask questions. Use the current resources you have to look up answers to questions that you may have if they seem like they're busy or dealing with something else. And just continue to prove that you're a motivated learner. And while they're dealing with those other things, don't just sit there on your phone. Take that time to work on some things and do things that might help you later on in that rotation.
And I think being able to kind of help with that as a student and make sure that you're giving your preceptor some space to breathe as well is acknowledging, like, when would be a good time for me to go eat my lunch? Is it okay if I find another spot to eat my lunch? And I think just acknowledging that that's a good time for your preceptor to be able to catch up on things, and you can come back and they'll hopefully be in a good spot to continue with a little bit more of one-on-one time. But really being self-directive, following up, you know, if you're in the inpatient setting, going back and following up with your patients and their families independently in the morning after you've pre-rounded, going in once you're comfortable, of course, and seeing those patients independently and gathering what you think are pertinent history pearls in order to kind of present to your preceptor about what you think the plan should be for the day.
Those are great points. I think all of those things just help contribute to forming like really good relationships with your mentors or your preceptors that can help you down the road. So I have many students and I still will communicate with some of my preceptors about things. So I think that that just builds like really good healthy habits with colleagues.
Yeah, I would agree. I have a lot of my past students that are now practicing out in the community and in different roles, and they will still send me text messages and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or what about that? Or when I see a referral come through from one of my past students, I'm like, I taught them. I know that they are made the right referral. Like, I don't even have to question anything because we've built relationships and we've trusted those relationships. And also, I think it's important for students to know that we want to train our future nurse practitioners. We want to grow our future colleagues and we want to build those relationships. But the initiative has to be on their part to do the work and to do the readings and to pick our brains while they're there. Like, we are a wealth of knowledge that they have to get out of their learning experience what they want from us.
Yeah. And on that too, to remember that with those very specific areas where there might be an overwhelming sense of knowledge, that you want to walk away from it knowing everything. So I just think of like you guys in ENT working there, that if someone's doing a clinical rotation for one semester, the goal is to walk away with just enough information about ENT, not all of the information. And I think sometimes as students, we put that on ourselves where we didn't learn absolutely everything. And so it's just, as a student, remember, you know, your goal is to get exposure in these different areas and to learn, but you will not walk away, unfortunately, from one clinical rotation with all the knowledge you're going to need as a nurse practitioner. It is such a process that we have to build upon slowly with time.
Well, and we don't even know everything, right? In our own subspecialties, we're learning every day. But I think to build those connections, to have those people to lean back on is really important and valuable. Like, I know there are some students that I've had 5 years ago that I still stay connected with. And there are some that I've had 2 years ago that I couldn't even remember what they look like. Not to say it's because of they invested into their knowledge, and others, I think, were just there to fill the requirements. So I don't know if that's fair to say or not, but that was kind of my experience.
Well, you really need these people as contacts for later too. I mean, not just even for like patient referrals or clinical questions, but when you graduate as a new nurse practitioner, you're going to need clinical references to attest to your ability as an NP. And you really want to make sure you're using these opportunities and these preceptors to have those references to list out. Like, they have to be NPs or colleagues that attest to your role as a nurse practitioner. It can't be your nurse colleagues or your nurse manager because they've never seen you in that role. And so it is really important at the end of your rotation to not only thank your preceptor and ask for feedback, but also then to ask them, would you be willing to give me a good reference one day if I ask for it? And asking them is pretty key because you don't want to catch folks off guard. And then you also want to make sure that they'll give you a good reference. And having that conversation with your preceptor is really important.
Well, don't you also have to get people for your credentialing that can attest to your knowledge set? So it's like we have to have it for credentialing. And I think credentialing is something that we don't really talk about until we're in the process of it, which is very cumbersome. So if they could get a little tidbit to think about, oh, I'm going to need 3 or 4 people to sign off on my skill set prior to even getting credentialed to see basic patients is something relevant too. I'd like to talk a little bit about some things that students might not understand and things that I think we still experience as seasoned nurse practitioners, things like imposter syndrome, like, and then we feel exhaustion from the mental capabilities or like brain drain. So let's touch a little bit about those topics so they understand that it's the norm.
And really, you know, that imposter syndrome is exactly what it sounds like. It's suffering from that self-doubt and you think that everybody else around you knows way more than you do. And in those clinical settings as an APP student, you're right. And it can be exceptionally, I think, challenging for our nurses who are coming from an area where they are the expert. They are the preceptor in their nursing role. They are the one that always gets the IV on the first stick or the one that is the person that people look to in those critical clinical situations, and then you plop them into a rounding room with a multidisciplinary team, and they're saying abbreviations and words that they've never heard before. It can be extremely overwhelming. And so it's not unusual to have those feelings. But I think it's really important to think that this isn't the same role that you've been in. You're learning a whole entire new skill set. And thinking about that first day as a baby nurse, when you probably, you know, I definitely don't know anybody that cried in the bathroom on their first day. As not a me. Brand new baby.
I cried in my car. Uh-huh.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, you made it to the car. That's classy.
I still cry in my car sometimes.
Same. Well, then you think about how far you've come, yeah. You know, like you are so established in your RN career that you feel comfortable going back to school and building a whole nother knowledge set. So I don't think there's a fix to it, but it's definitely a real issue. And you're not alone in those feelings.
Absolutely. I always go back to the old nursing theory of novice to expert. And so, you know, when you go back to school, I think that everybody who goes back thinks that, okay, they're an expert at their current role as a nurse. And so it's time to move forward. But then you drop back down to that novice line. And that's kind of a hard pill to swallow. But just acknowledging it and knowing that eventually you'll get to that expert, to where you're precepting people and you have a whole group of people and team of APPs that want to see you succeed and will help you get there.
Yeah, it's very humbling. Like when you think about how that happened as a brand new nurse. There's not one moment that you could probably identify that you stopped having that feeling. You know, so I think that's the other thing to keep in mind for our NP students or even just newer NPs. I mean, imposter syndrome can really extend for a little bit beyond your graduation.
Well, and I think it's all about having a growth mindset too, because I think like at the end of the day, we're all still learning all the time. And if you reach a point that you don't feel like you're learning anything new, then maybe you need to be trying something new. So I think that that's kind of something you're just kind of constantly challenging yourself. And that's how we're going to improve patient care and like advance in our healthcare systems is just always trying to learn the next new thing.
Yeah. And in regards to brain drain, like that's just that physical exhaustion that you feel after an active day of learning, which most students are probably just perpetually living in that state.
Yes.
And so it can feel probably even more overwhelming when you start those clinical rotations because you're going into these specific areas and then you're just getting hit with all this new information and can feel overwhelming. And so it is important to just recognize that that's normal. It happens. And when you can, take even those small moments of time for yourself. And not that I'm endorsing car crying, but if it's time in your car to listen to a podcast that you really enjoy, like this one, or listen to music that you really enjoy, just those even 10-minute drives could be helpful in terms of taking that time. It's quiet or just silence in your car and really kind of enjoying that moment because it's hard to be in school. And we all remember that we were there. It's hard to work and go back to school.
It's hard to work, go back to school. And everybody has a family, right? Regardless of who makes up that family, but have things that are important to them and just balancing it all out and knowing that sacrifices have to be made. And brain drain is real. It happens to all of us still. And an active day of learning even makes it harder. So after you finish your semester long interview, as you put it, or your learning opportunity for that semester and you finish clinicals, you know, kind of what are some advice or some things that you want our students to know?
Yeah, I mean, first celebrate, like you did it. Way to go. Do a little happy dance or like whatever tickles your fancy. And then make sure that you thank your preceptor. Being intentional and giving them a handwritten note on your last day, or at least sending them an email and letting them know that you appreciated their time. Like you guys so astutely said, these are relationships that hopefully will last the duration of your professional career. And making sure that people are getting recognition for the time that they're volunteering within our institution is kind of the minimum you can do.
And then also keep in mind that your school, your program may have specific paperwork that needs to be done. And so giving your preceptor opportunity and time to get that completed is important. It can be overwhelming for a preceptor if they're emailed a bunch of forms that they need to print off and sign for you. And you were supposed to submit those to your program last week, and now you're asking them to do it today. And so if you know you have things that are due, you need their signatures on, or you know that you have an evaluation from your school that they need to fill out by a certain date, communicate that in advance with them. That way they can make sure that they can get that done on your behalf.
I love that. Well, I'd love to just kind of sum up some of your best clinical tips and tricks for any of our listeners, just so they can take away a few things. And so I think maybe some of the most important things I heard you guys talk about was, number one, always arrive on time. Just make sure you've communicated beforehand so you know like what to wear. Make sure that your preceptor knows like who you are, where you came from, kind of your background. And number two, remember every rotation has something to take away from it. So it might not be your dream thing, but you still have something to take away from it. Number three, remember that your preceptor volunteered their time. So just take the time to kind of talk through when they think is best to communicate any questions you might have and show them that you're a motivated learner. So maybe you take notes or maybe you ask for additional resources, those sorts of things. And then finally, just remember that imposter syndrome and brain drain are real things and they're very normal, and take some time for yourself.
Yeah. And I think I just want the students out there to know that we are here to help you succeed. Molly and Melissa kind of lead the charge, but I think I can speak for most advanced practice providers that we are there to help you succeed and to use as resources. So just know that we got you.
I mean, and we are so grateful for our preceptors like Tricia and Toby, who are willing to donate their time and really help create our workforce pipeline here at Children's Mercy. Your experience is invaluable.
I think our preceptors really, it makes our jobs more enjoyable to have students with us. It's so wonderful to see how excited they can be about the area of work that you just see. Sometimes it's like, oh, I'm just going to work today. And then you have a student with you and their face lights up when they catch on to something or they get to experience something they've never gotten to see before. And so having a student really does enhance my job. And I know a lot of our preceptors feel the same way.
It also helps my knowledge too, because sometimes they'll ask me questions and I'm like, ooh, very good question. I don't know the answer. Let's look it up. Let's talk about it. Let's investigate it, you know? And so I find it that I learn just as much from them as they do from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it was so, so great to have you guys on, Melissa. And I'm sure this podcast will be utilized throughout multiple years to help our students be successful. So we thank you for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, ladies. If you have a topic that you would like to hear about or you are interested in being a guest, you can email us at tdobryan@cmh.edu or twilliams@cmh.edu. Once again, thanks so much for listening to the Advanced Practice Perspectives podcast.